Okay, so we're going to say that the king of fierce countenance does not fit Antiochus. The first argument is transgressors are come to the full. I think you could say there are two times in history that exceed the wickedness under Antiochus. Number one would be the time of the flood. Number two would be the last days. And scriptures on that would be Matthew 24:12. That's the one that says, "And because sin shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." So the abounding of sin is a last days sign. It's not an intertestament event. You remember the context of Matthew 24 was when the apostles asked Jesus, "When will the last days be? How will we know we're close to the time of the coming of the Lord?" And Jesus said, "Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." And so the abounding of sin was a sign of the nearness of the coming of the Lord. It's a last days thing. And that's what this is. When transgressors are come to the full. That's a last days sign. Jesus did not say, the abounding of sin happened 165 years ago. It was a future thing. And then 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 and 13 is another passage that would pertain to the end time. "This know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. Evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." And so that's a time that would refer to the end time. Okay, number two. "By peace destroy many." That'll be verse 25. "And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many." Okay, now the argument here is verse 25, "by peace destroy many." But Antiochus operated by war methods. Antiochus did not operate by peace. Antiochus operated by war, whereas the Antichrist will promote world peace. There are four scriptures that talk about the Antichrist promoting peace. The first one is Daniel 11:21-24. And this one says, "And in his estate shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries." Verse 24, "He shall enter peaceably even upon the fattest places of the provinces." 1 Thessalonians 5:3, "For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them." Revelation 13:4, "Who is able to make war with him?" The answer is, who is able to make war with him? And the implication is no one. No one is able to make war with him. He's too powerful to make war with, and so there isn't any war. And Revelation 13:11. This is regarding the false prophet, not the Antichrist, but it pertains to his kingdom. And it says that the false prophet has two horns like a lamb. Two horns like a lamb. You remember when you studied the book of Revelation and they taught you that lambs don't have horns, you know. And so you have two horns like a lamb. There's something funny about that because a lamb doesn't have horns. And what it's saying is he has horns. Horns represent power, but his horns are like a lamb. They're lamb horns. Now, you know, you've seen a little lamb, haven't you? Ever seen a real little lamb? Like one of these real little ones? They're about the size of a dog. A little tiny lamb. Now, you know, if a little lamb had little teeny lamb horns about this big, you know, that's not any big threat, really. You know, not like a ram or a rhinoceros or something that has a big horn. And so, what it's saying is, the false prophet is very powerful, but his power is meek. His power is lamb-like. His power is soft-spoken and lamb-like. So I think when it says in verse 25 here, "by peace he shall destroy many," that fits the Antichrist better than Antiochus Epiphanes.
because Antiochus Epiphanes did his conquering with an army. Verse 25, it says, cause craft to prosper in his hand. Cause craft to prosper. Causing craft to prosper is a reference to the Antichrist. Scriptures for the Antichrist would be Daniel 11:36. This one says, and the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. And then Revelation 18:11-19. And this is the description of the prosperity of the Antichrist kingdom. The merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones, and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all thyine wood, and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood, and of brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. And the fruits that thy soul lusted after are departed from thee, and all things which were dainty and goodly are departed from thee. The merchants of these things which were made rich by her shall stand afar off for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, and saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in 1 hour so great riches is come to naught, and every shipmaster and all the company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off, etc. So you see the richness of the thing. It says here that he shall cause craft to prosper. That is the Antichrist, according to the book of Revelation. Here is where you have this great prosperity in goods and so forth. Number 4, the transgression of desolation. That's in verse 13. The transgression of desolation, another name for the abomination of desolation. This is an end time event that Jesus said had not happened by his time. Matthew 24:15. So the description of the king of fierce countenance, or at least we could say the description of the little horn, the description of Antiochus here goes beyond Antiochus. Antiochus did not do the transgression of desolation that Jesus spoke of. Matthew 24:15. Number 5, destroy the holy people. That's in verse 24. It says, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, and he shall destroy wonderfully and prosper in practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. I would say that although Antiochus persecuted the Jews, he did not destroy the Jews. He did not destroy them in the sense that he killed all of them, so the nation no longer existed. He did not eliminate every Jew alive. But the Antichrist will kill every Christian. He will totally exterminate all of them. Revelation 13:7. This says, and it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. So verse 24 says he'll destroy the holy people. That better fits the Antichrist than Antiochus. Okay, number 6. This is in 8:24. It says, he shall destroy the mighty people. Notice that it says mighty. He shall destroy the mighty people. Now, the question is this. The Jews Antiochus faced were not really mighty. Only certain leaders opposed him with divine power, and those who opposed Antiochus with God's help, like the Maccabees, beat Antiochus, and Antiochus lost. So this does not apply to Antiochus. This says he'll destroy the mighty people. The Jews as a whole were not mighty, only certain ones were. And these anointed leaders beat Antiochus. They were not destroyed by him. For example, the Maccabees. But in the end time, you can show examples of great, mighty saints, and they are still overcome by the Antichrist. For example, the two witnesses. The two witnesses in the book of Revelation will be mighty, and yet they'll be destroyed by the Antichrist. A scripture for that would be Revelation 11, 3-6. And this one says, I will give power to my two witnesses. They shall prophesy 1260 days. And it says, if any man will hurt them, fire proceedeth out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies. And if any man will hurt them, he must in this matter be killed. These have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. Now these are mighty men. We can't smite the earth with a plague as often as we will. This is a mighty man here, calling fire down from heaven and smiting the earth with plagues. And yet you know, it says in verse 7, and when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. So, there you go. He destroys the mighty people. That's one instance. Number 7, verse 25, he is broken without hand. He is broken without hand. Now, I demonstrated this by breaking a piece of chalk earlier, you remember? How I said it means that the horn was there and without any visible attack, it just broke and fell off. And it shows then that it was God who did this. It means he was not dethroned by a man, by human power, but rather by invisible, unseen, divine power. Antiochus Epiphanes died of sickness, so this would not apply to him. Excuse me, but the Antichrist will be thrown alive into the lake of fire. Revelation 19:20 describes the end of the Antichrist. And it says, and the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet, these both were cast alive into a lake of fire, burning with brimstone. That's what you call being broken without hand. You're totally cut off from your position, and no man did it at all. Here you're cast alive into the lake of fire. Being cast alive into the lake of fire is kind of like the rapture in reverse. You're a living human being on the earth, and you are caught away, not to heaven, but right directly alive into the lake of fire alive. What a terrible thought.
Couldn't you say that it was God who killed Antiochus by sickness, and it wasn't a man, and so therefore it's without hand?
Well, I don't know that it was God who killed him. All I know is he did die of sickness. And I meant to say, the Antichrist life will come to and rule will come to an end by an act of God, not by an act of man. Antiochus's reign, I don't know if you could attribute it to God or whether it was just a sickness. I don't know. But this idea of being broken without hand, to me, better fits the Antichrist than it does Antiochus. Because here, I take without hand to mean a man didn't do it, God did it. And it fits better to say the Antichrist is taken by God and thrown alive into the lake of fire. No man did that, God did that. Now, with Antiochus, all I know is that he died of sickness. So I don't know if I can attribute that to God. Okay, verse 23. Maybe you can. Maybe the Lord put an end to his life too. Okay, number 8, verse 23. It says, the latter time of their kingdom. The latter time of their kingdom. And I already argued this point. I said Antiochus is the 8th ruler in a dynasty of 22. So he's not truly in the latter part of the kingdom. But the Antichrist is, because he is the last ungodly ruler in all of history. So clearly, He is in the latter time of their kingdom. He's in the latter time of the Grecian kingdom, because the Grecian kingdom's life was prolonged, so he's at the end of Greece. But he's also the very last ungodly ruler ever. He's the final monarch who would be an ungodly sinner. And so there he is, and it fits him really well. Verse 25, number 9, verse 25, he magnifies himself. This is an obvious reference to the Antichrist through many parallel passages. Lots of scriptures say the Antichrist magnifies himself. For example, Daniel 11, 36 and 37, 2 Thessalonians 2, 4, Revelation 13, 6. Okay, number 10, verse 24, it says, he shall be mighty, but not by his own power. See, let me go back to Daniel. Verse 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Now, that is fulfilled directly in the Antichrist, because the Bible says Satan gives the Antichrist his power. And that'll be 2 Thessalonians 2, 4, which says it plainly, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. Whoops, that's not the one I want. I want 2 Thessalonians 2, 9. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. So there you have the Antichrist coming with satanic power. 2 Thessalonians 2, 9. And the other scripture is Revelation 13, 2. And this says, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. There is one more scripture that I probably should throw in, and that is, according to the book of Revelation, the kings give their power unto the beast too. And that's in Revelation 17:13. It says, these have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. I don't think that's talking about power to work miracles or something, though. I think it's just saying they have authority over certain nations or certain businesses or something, and they give it all to the Antichrist. In fact, it's my opinion that what's going to happen is a loosely knit world government will be established by these 10 kings before the Antichrist rules. It'll be in force and operating, and it'll be run by these 10 men. And then they take this kingdom that they have built and they just give it to the Antichrist, and he begins to rule it. That's what I think will happen. The reason I think that will happen is it says in chapter 17 that they agree and give their kingdom to the beast. That's Revelation 17:17. It says, for God hath put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree. God put it in their hearts to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast. Their kingdom. Notice it says it's their kingdom. The 10 kings, I think, put it together. They establish it. They own it. They run it. They rule it. They believe in it. They promote it. There it is. It's theirs. And it says God puts it in their heart. And so they all go, you know what? I really agree that we should have this guy rule. And the other guy goes, I agree. And they say, how many agree? They say, we all agree. God put it in their heart to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast. You know, God would have to put it in their heart to agree, because a guy like that, you know, is pretty covetous to want to rule the whole world and dominate over everybody and be a multi-billionaire and that kind of thing. Some guy like that who spends his whole adult life scheming and planning and downing others and so forth to become the richest man in the world and to rule and rule over all these multinational companies and everything, he's not going to get all that and then just give it to somebody. Not a guy like that. You know, a guy like that is going to want more, not less. God has to put it in their heart to agree just to give their kingdom unto the beast. Say, here, you take this kingdom. We built it, but we can see that you really are the man to run it. You've got everybody behind you. They're not behind us, they're behind you. So if we just give it over to you, you'll be able to hold it together and make it function like it should. In fact, we've been waiting for a guy like you. That's probably what they'll say. Scheming and planning. We need somebody like that who's able to have all the people, you know, hold all the people of the whole world together. See, everybody in the world is not like Americans. You know, we forget that there are other nations. I do, don't you? You know, you live like there aren't any Chinese. But there are. There's way more of them than us. We forget about South America. Let's see. You're from Sweden, right? You live in Sweden, you forget that we're here in America, huh? What?
Yeah, maybe the US people have more tendency to forget other
nations. It's because our nation is pretty big and rich, and so we think everybody in the world lives like we do. But they don't. They don't. Not at all. How big is Sweden?
8 million?
Okay, well, we have 250 million. So that's a lot. We have almost 8 million people in New York City. You know, in just one city. So, and that's nothing to brag about, because New York City is a very sinful city, you know. But it's big. Okay. Boy, I'd like to say something here, but I won't. Okay. Daniel, what was that, 8:24? Not by his own power. See, Satan gives the Antichrist power. That is fulfilled directly by the Antichrist. Verse 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Can't you see that? You go to Bible prophecy, who's the guy who gets power from the devil? It's the Antichrist. That's who this is talking about. Number 11, he shall stand up against the prince of princes. That's verse 25. It says, he shall also stand up against the prince of princes. That's an obvious reference to the Antichrist again. It means he will oppose Jesus Christ. Antiochus never opposed Jesus Christ because Jesus Christ had not been born yet. But the Antichrist does, and he does it at the Battle of Armageddon. Here are the scriptures that say the Antichrist stands up against Christ. Revelation 17:14, these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. So there they are, battling the Lamb, Revelation 17:14, and also Revelation 19:19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. So there they are, standing up against the prince of princes at the battle of Armageddon, just like Daniel said. Okay, number 12, 8:23, it says, understanding dark sentences. Understanding dark sentences. Now, this is probably a reference to demonic wisdom from Satan. Probably a reference to demonic wisdom from Satan. Now, James 3:15 talks about this demonic wisdom. And it says, this wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. Devilish means demonic. And so there is a demonic wisdom. And this demonic wisdom works with regard to earthly things, sensual things, natural, sensual, fleshly things, and it's demonic. That's probably what this refers to. It probably is beyond what Antiochus had. I can't prove that, but I think understanding dark sentences does not truly apply to Antiochus as well as it would apply to the Antichrist, because we have scriptures that are so plain for the Antichrist. Okay, now let's see. There's a couple more things I want to say here. We
look through my notes here for a second, make sure I covered everything so far. Okay, did I give you a list of the events in Antiochus' reign? I don't think I did. We just read that those chapters, but we didn't really make a detailed list of what he did and draw a time chart and stuff. Okay, I want to do that now. And in order to do this, I want to ask a question, and then I'm going to answer it. Here's the question. What do the 2300 days refer to? So let's answer that. What do the 2300 days refer to? There are four theories. Well, let me ask you a question. If there's a Bible prophecy and it says, what is this? And an angel says, oh, that's 2300 days, and when the 2300 days are over, then the sanctuary is cleansed. There's two ways to interpret that 2300 days. What are those two ways? Literal or figuratively, right? You'd have to say it either means 2300 literal days, or else it's not literal, it's allegorical or symbolic. If it's symbolic, what does it probably refer to? What would you think? Yeah, a year for a day. So you'd say 2300 years instead of 2300 days. Because that's what we did with the 70 weeks prophecy, remember? 70 weeks wasn't a year and a half. 70 weeks was 70 weeks of years. Each day stands for a year. So you have 490 years instead of 490 days. This is the same book, same prophet, same angel. So 2300 days, if you took it allegorically, would probably mean 2300 years. Now, there's four ways to explain what the 2300 days refer to. Let me give you what I think the meaning of the question is first, and then we'll talk about it. Oh, no, I guess first I'll make a list of the ways you could interpret the 2300 days. You could interpret them in these ways. Number one, 2300 days of temple trouble caused by Antiochus Epiphanes. That's one interpretation of what the 2300 days are. Now this might look weird, but this is the second possibility given by ministers. 1150 days of temple trouble caused by Antiochus Epiphanes. Now you might say it says 2300 days, so how could they possibly say 1150 days? And you know, we can answer that with a question and say, how can anybody possibly believe there is a purgatory? You know, and it's the same error. They just misinterpret what it says. It says 2300 and they said 1150. Number three, 2300 or 1150 literal days at the end time I guess you would say days of temple trouble at the end time, presumably caused by the Antichrist. We'll say literal days of temple trouble at the end time, presumably caused by the Antichrist. And the fourth possibility would be allegorical days. Allegorical days. In other words, 2300 symbolic days, probably a year for a day, so this would refer to a 2300 year period during which the temple trouble occurs. 2300 year period during which the temple trouble occurs. So those are the four possibilities that are given by most commentators. The most common interpretation is this one. Number one, Antiochus Epiphanes caused temple trouble for 2300 days. Now, we're going to study each of these views one at a time, beginning now. But first, I want to give you a statement about this question in verse 13. It says, how long shall be the vision? And the answer is, 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Now, do you understand what that means? It says, verse 13, how long shall be the vision? The answer is, 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. So what he's saying is, how long will it take for the prophecy, you know, in the vision to come to pass? And the angel says, Daniel, it'll take 2,300 days for all this temple trouble to happen. And then, by the time the last day of the 2,300 days is over, then all the temple trouble will be over with, and the 2,300 days will be over. Then, after the 2,300 days have totally elapsed and are over with, at that point, there will be no more temple trouble, and the sanctuary will be cleansed. So, you follow that now? The 2,300 is how long the temple trouble will continue until it's all over with. And when it's all over with, the next event is the cleansing of the sanctuary. Now you can see why people apply this to Antiochus Epiphanes. It's because he did all this bad stuff by persecuting the Jews, and then Judas Maccabeus overthrew him, and after he overthrew him in 164, Judas cleaned up the temple, destroyed the altar to Jupiter, had a sacrifice, cleansed the temple, rededicated it to God, and offered lambs and bullocks and so forth on top of that, and it resumed the sacrificial system. And so Antiochus' bad events lasted, you know, 2,300 days back here, and then when it was over with, the sanctuary was cleansed. So it seems to fit. The correct meaning of the question, how long shall be the vision, is this. I want you to write it down. You probably won't understand it when I first say it, but we'll go over it a couple times till you get it. Quote, how long will it be from the real starting point of the little horn until its antitype, until its antitype, now put in parentheses, the Antichrist, close parentheses, because that's the antitype of the little horn, until its antitype, the Antichrist, completes the four events of temple trouble, question mark, close quote. Completes the four events of temple trouble. Completes the four events of temple trouble. Question mark, close quote. That's what I think he means when he says, how long shall be the vision? What he's saying is, how long will it take from the real beginning point of the little horn until the little horn, that's Antiochus, and the real antitype that the little horn represents causes his temple trouble too. How long will it take from the beginning of this horn that's going to cause temple trouble? How long will it be from then through the first set of temple trouble and the last set of temple trouble and it's all over with? And he says, 2,300 days. That's how long it'll take. And after that's over, the sanctuary will be cleansed. Now, this interpretation of the question that I just gave you shows you that I accept theory four. Because I don't believe that Antiochus did anything back here that lasts 2,300 or 1,150, which is half of 2,300. And I don't necessarily believe that there's 2,300 or 1,150 literal days up there at the Antichrist time either. I think the whole prophecy is saying
from the beginning point, which is way back here, 312, all the way down to the end time, is 2,300 years.
That's how long the whole thing is going to take. So let's look at these theories one at a time. Oh, by the way, most commentators don't take the question that way. They take it to mean this: how long will the sacrifices be stopped by Antiochus Epiphanes? That's how they take the question. How long shall be the vision means, how long will the sacrifices remain stopped by Antiochus Epiphanes? Now, I think if God meant that, he would have said, how long will the sacrifices remain stopped? Now, I can hear an opponent saying, well, yeah, but if he meant, how long will it be from the real starting point of the little horn until its antitype completes the four events of temple trouble, he could have said that too. You know, and I would have to say, well, you're right. I'm interpreting and you're interpreting. We're both interpreting. And so it's just a matter of interpretation. I think, though, if you leave the statement as is, how long shall be the vision? There's more stuff in the vision than just the sacrifices being stopped. That's just one event of four items of temple trouble. Look at the temple trouble. It's in verse 13. It says, the daily sacrifice is taken away. That's just one event of temple trouble. They're stopped, in other words. Verse 13. Daniel 8:13. Daniel 8:13 is interpreted by Daniel 8:11. 13 says, concerning the daily sacrifice. Okay, look at verse 11. By him the daily sacrifice was taken away. So that's what he means when he brings up the sacrifice in verse 13. He means the stopping of the sacrifice. That's proved by verse 11. But there's other things in verse 13. You have the transgression of desolation. That's something else. You have the sanctuary trodden underfoot. That's a third event. And the host trodden underfoot. That's a fourth event. So when he says, how long shall be the vision, he doesn't just mean, how long will the sacrifices be stopped? He means, how long will it take for the whole vision to be fulfilled? The whole vision goes backward in time, too. It doesn't just start with Antiochus. The whole vision says, there's this big horn. And out of this horn comes a little horn. And then he's effectively cut off, and you progress in history till you get another horn, the Antichrist. So when he says, how long will be the vision, what he's saying is, how long will be the whole vision? Not, how long is this little section right there? That's what these guys are saying. These guys are saying, this is Antiochus Epiphanes, and he reigns in 175, and he's overthrown in 164 in Palestine, and for part of that time he caused temple trouble in Palestine. How long is this? That isn't how long is the vision. The vision is from here to here. That's what it is. So the question includes more than just how long the sacrifices are stopped, because the vision includes more than that. You've got the whole little horn. The little horn is a person, not a temple event. The vision includes the family that man came from. The vision includes the horns themselves, not just temple events done by the horns. So the 2300 days calculation has to include the horns, not just what the horns do. That's why I say, how long shall be the vision refers to how long shall be the whole thing. Here's what I think. If you were to draw what he saw, you know, I don't know what it looked like. I'm not talking about details, but we'll draw this little interval of, you know, of 2,000 years or something between Antiochus, who lived before Christ, and the Antichrist, who's going to live at the end time. But watch this. Here's the little horn. You know what this looked like to John? It looked like this. Let's see, I'll just draw it this way. This is all horn. Oh, I'm going to really get dirty tonight.
Look at this chop. So soft. Okay. Now, you see how that's all one horn? That is what he saw. Or maybe I should just fill this in here. He did not... In fact, I don't even like those little lines there. We'll get rid of those lines. That's what he saw. He did not see this. With a line there. That's not what he saw. He saw this. It's all the same horn. Because this is the Seleucid family. This part of the horn right there, this is this guy's dad. They're the same flesh. Okay? It's father to son to father to son to father to son. So there's no lines on this thing like this. He didn't see that. He saw it like this. That's what he saw.
So, to me this is significant. Because the little horn,
this little horn starts here. It doesn't really start here. It starts here. Because it's all the same all the way back to the very beginning of it.
Okay. Now let's look at these theories one at a time. Theory. Did our bell ring? We still have a couple minutes. Okay. Theory number one. 2300 days of temple trouble caused by Antiochus Epiphanes. Okay. Let's look at that.
And I'll write down the major events in Antiochus' rule that pertain to the Jews, and we'll see if he did anything that lasted 2300 literal days. Okay. What we know is, in 175, he began his rule. And we know that in 172, he appoints the evil Menelaus as high priest, M-E-N-E-L-A-U-S. Menelaus was a fake high priest. 170, you have hostile events begin in Jerusalem. Hostile events begin. That's in June. June of 170. 169 BC, you have capturing Jerusalem. 167 BC, he stops the sacrifice, and that's in June. 167 BC, he erected a heathen altar inside the temple, and that's in December of 167. 167 BC, he forced the abominable sacrifice right on the temple of God. And that was, believe it or not, December 25th of 167. And then in 164 BC, Judas Maccabeus restored the sacrifice. And that was December 25 again of 164 BC. Now, let's draw a time chart and see what we can find out about Antiochus Epiphanes' events and see if they fit. Now, how long is 2300 days? 2300 days is 6 years, 4 months, and 20 days. Now, that's figuring it out a 360-day year. It's 6 years and 140 days. So that's 4 months, 30 days a month is 120 plus another 20. So it's 6 years, 4 months. That's like 6 and a third years. Okay? Everybody with me? So we're looking for Antiochus to do something that lasts a little over 6 years. Now, in order to do this, I'm going to draw this chart. We'll start with 175 here. Okay, and I'm going to write DJ and then a line, and then DJ and then a line. And this means January to December, and here's the year. We'll write 170, and then January to December, 169, etc. And I'll write this chart while you take your break. And then when we come back, we'll look at it. Whoops.